Welcome to Trapping Across America, where fur brothers meet every week. Where we're still allowed to be men, and we're proud to be from the land of the fur and the home of the brave. Welcome to Trapping Across America. This is your host, Clint Locklear. We're going to be talking about everything involved with being an organic, free-range, wild fur farmer of North America this week, and we have a great interview, and I believe a lot of y'all are going to know who this gentleman is. It's Mark June from Nebraska. Sounds like he may be Mark June from Texas here in a couple of years, if not sooner, but Mark June is well-known coyote trapper, predator trapper. He's got a lot of videos, has a very good lure line. A lot of people have watched his videos and stuff like that, seen him. I did the interview when we were up at the Kentucky convention, when it was a smaller show, and when the demos got a little, someone that everybody wanted to go see because it was a smaller show, the building kind of empty out, and I got time to talk a lot with Mark June about a lot of different subjects, and I talked him into doing the radio show, which we did after we grabbed some dinner that night back in the motel room. And I think everybody here is going to enjoy it. Very entertaining, to say the least. Very fun to listen to. And I think there's going to be some tidbits that everybody's going to be able to pick up and listen to. Now, I've got a new family member of Predator Control Group I want to introduce everybody to, and if you've never seen one of these, go look it up on YouTube, because this son of a gun is bad to the bone. I picked up a Kel-Tec KSB 12 gauge tactical shotgun that's going to be part of our security team when we go down on the border this year. Everybody that's seen it so far has called it a zombie killer, but I think we're going to call it the border patrol killer. And It's just a really neat shotgun. I think it has some applications to some predator control beyond what most people think of in a shotgun. The cool thing about this shotgun, it's very light. It's very short. It's a bullpup design. So, you know, it's not much longer than an 18-inch half barrel, but it holds 14 rounds. And the firing system of this thing actually allows you to flip over where if you're going to be dealing with, if you're a predator calling, you come across hogs, you can flip the cylinders over where the tubes feed the barrel from buckshot or four shot or whatever you're dealing with over to slugs and any combination like that. It's a really cool gun that has a lot of applications, I believe, to predator control or nuisance control, because you could go from squirrel shot to a slug in just a flip of a little switch and rack into the action. So if you've never seen one of those, you can go to YouTube. It's just a Kel-Tec shotgun. They're not the cheapest things in the world, but they're one of the coolest things, and I've been playing around with mine. I would say one thing, if you get one, go ahead and get you a Limb Saver medium size to go put on there, because it will rock you pretty hard because it is so light. But it's just a cool thing to have. It's a cool thing to look into if you need. And everybody needs more guns, for goodness sake. So there you go on that. Before we get to our interview tonight with Mark June, I want to go over our sponsors. They do a lot to help us with our keep our server space and everything like that. It keeps me really motivated, because I know not to let them down or let you down, and kind of ties everything together. And our first one this week is Wildlife Control Supplies. And, of course, it's wildlifecontrolsupplies.com. We have a link down in the show notes. You can call them at 877-684-7262. International number is 860-844-0101. They have proven solutions for wildlife control, delivering value, expertise, and products to the wildlife industry professionals. Now, one of the things I was looking at on their website, I just want to go over real quick, I thought was, where did they go? Maybe we'll do it next time. That's a bummer. Well, I was looking at their DVDs, their instructional DVDs. I mean, they've got, if you're looking to get an ADC work, they got DVDs show you how to catch moles, do exclusion on bats, to using the live traps for beaver, the Hancocks, all different things like that. It has such a wide range of learning tools at Wildlife Control Supplies. It's amazing. So if you're getting into this business, this is a website you need to have on your favorites. No questions about that one. Next sponsor this week is Oki Cable and Trap Supply out of Oklahoma. You can reach Jeb, which is the owner, at oktrapsupply.com. You can give him a call at 918-429-4648. And he's running a special just for Trapping Radio listeners. And this is a heck of a special. If you're into coyote trapping or bobcat trapping and you want to have a mix-up on your coyotes with some bobcat urine, or you need a body over odor of a bobcat when you're bobcat trapping, you know, I recommend a gland lure or a good urine. He's got good urine, and he's running a special right now just for this month, a gallon of good quality bobcat urine for $30. That's right, $30. If you've been looking at how expensive bobcat urine is, you'll realize how big of a deal that is. So you can go to his website, or you can call him at 918-429-4648. It's only going to last a month, guys. Let him know you're coming from Trapping Radio. You're the only people that's getting this deal. So if you're going to be needing bobcat urine later on in the year, I highly suggest you save this money, because it's going to be somewhere in the range of $10 to $20 you're going to save per gallon. I mean, that's a big savings, and I appreciate Jeb for doing that special for Trapping Radio listeners. Our next sponsor this week is F&T Fur Harvesting Trading Post. They have everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator control. You can reach them at fntpost.com. That's Foxtrot November Tango Post.com. Or you can call them at 989-727-8727. They'll have everything that you'll need for trapping. I mean, if you can think about it, they've got it. They've got all kind of trap parts. They've got all kind of traps, baits, lures, DVDs. They're kind of like the Cabela's of trapping. So anything you need, they're going to have. And now, you know, it's interesting. I just got back off the road. I've been filming with Alan Probst, doing some ADC work. And I've also been filming all the trapper tips on the trapping segments of F&T's. They're changing their name to Freedom Outdoors on the Sportsman's Channel. That'll start probably sometime in December, beginning of January. Got to spend a little bit of time with Alan Probst, true professional at what he does. Had a good time. He's a fun guy to hang around with. We got a lot of filming done, and it's just a cool thing what F&T's doing, putting the show on a national outdoor station the way that they are, because it's a lot of money. And you know, if you enjoy the show, send them an email, just tell them so they'll know that you appreciate what they're doing, basically. And, you know, part of the filming we got to play around with was the new Freedom brand dogproof traps, and really, really cool what they were doing and some of the modifications and stuff that I was showing on the filming. So that'll be coming out, I think, like I said, I think the show is coming out the end of December, 1st of January of this year, the new episodes. Our last but not least sponsor this week is Blue Ridge Outdoor Supplies. That's Scott Painter's place. Wasn't too long ago I was up there, and he had a trapper's day, and I gave a bunch of demos and stuff like that. Got to talk to a lot of really good trappers and good people, and showing some people, you know, the way I do stuff, and I really enjoyed hearing how they did stuff. It's a really good time. He's got a neat video out. It's Scott Painter's canine trapping video, shot in the east, in terrain like most of you that's listening to this are going to be in, fields and mountain roads and all that type stuff, shot there in Virginia. So you got to check it out. Now, Scott is also running a special just for Trapping Radio listeners. If you order $100 worth of supplies from him, he's basically going to give you $5 for nothing, except being a Trapper Radio listener. So if you need to order some supplies, check out what he has, because he's got about everything. If you need it, go ahead and order it from him. And then when you get to the coupon on his store, you just type in radio, and the computer will just basically give you $5 off your order just because you're a Trapping Radio listener. I appreciate him doing that, and I'm sure that if you're needing supplies, you're going to be ordering from Scott. You'll appreciate him doing that too, because, you know, he's just basically giving you $5. I mean, how cool is that? Well, that's our sponsors this week. Before we get into our interview, I'm going to talk a little bit about one thing that I did a trapper's tip on with for F&T on their show, and I'm going to expand on that a little bit more because those trapper tips are, you know, like a minute and a half max, so there's not a whole lot you can get into on that. But it's one of the questions they're getting a lot is how much lure and bait does someone put on a set. And that's probably coming from a lot of guys that are just getting into trapping, you know, and that's great. So they're wanting to know how much of this stinky stuff they need to put down in a hole or on a flat set. Well, one of the things that I do a lot, because it speeds up my line and everything, and that's what I show in a trapper's tip, is I get the little plastic spoons. You can buy them in lots of 600 at Sam's. I'm sure you can get them that way at Costco. Even if you buy them at Walmart, they're not that expensive. But I'm always using bait at a set, and I'm always using lure at a set, or most of the time I'm using lure at a set. So what I'll do is I'll grab one of those spoons, I carry them with me, I break it, the handle in the middle, and then I can scoop out a spoonful of bait, put it down the hole, then the handle that I broke off, I can put in the lure and use as a stick, and I also put that down the hole. So I've got a little ready-made system there. It's real easy. I'm not looking for sticks or anything like that. There's no guesswork involved. If it'll stay on the in the spoon, it's about the right amount for your bait. And if you put it on the plastic tip where you break it off, that's about the same as a stick. That's about, if you're using good lure, that's all you need. Now, another thing you can do, of course, a lot of you know about using wool and cotton and stuff like that. If you use more of a liquid type bait or lure, and that'll really absorb it up. But here's a really neat tip for you. If you know somebody that's got alpacas and you can get some of that alpaca fur, I promise you, you will probably never find anything better for coyotes than using down a hole in that alpaca fur. You can probably catch most of your coyotes with just the alpaca fur. It's got a strange smell. Canines just go gaga over it. So, you know, that's one little tip there. The other thing is, I've had several guys that's been talking to me, and some of them have actually sent me some bottles they're using. They're using medicine bottles. And what they're doing, if they know they're going to run 30 sets that day, or about 30 sets, they'll preload these bottles with bait and lure. They'll put the top back on them. Then they'll set those in a box or a bag or something in the back of their truck. So when they get done making their set, really what they're doing is they can take the lid off of the medicine bottle or the medicine jar. They can put that down in the hole. Now, the cool part about this is, if you make a catch and you're not using drags, of course, you know, it's probably going to get dirt and everything in it. But if you don't make a catch, you can reach in there, grab your lure and bait out with that bottle, put the cap back on it, go take it to another set. I mean, you would think that the nature Nazis would love this, because it's like environmental lure eco recycling or something. And you can, you know, take that, and it'll save you money, because the less money you spend, the more money you'll make on your fur check. But those are just a few things that I do when I am playing with bait and lure and stuff like that. Because if you're just relying on sticks and things, one of the ways I used to always do my lure with is I'd buy the smaller popsicle sticks at Walmart, and they come in a bag of about 100. I'd break that in two, and that's what I would just keep in my trapping bag. I'd put my lure on that popsicle stick, and I'd throw it down the hole, and that'd be good to go. So just some really simple things to think about. If you've never tried any of these methods, give them a try. You might find out it's simple. I know it's simple. It definitely works. And if you're using the spoon method, you'll know about how much bait and lure that you need to have down in that hole. Let's go ahead and get to our interview with Mark June. I'm sure you want to hear what he has to say more than me anyway.
Well, for anybody that don't know who you are, why don't you go and introduce yourself?
Yeah, Mark June. I'm out of Nebraska, originally from Michigan. Biologist by education, but I haven't used my degree in an official capacity in a long, long time. But it's helped me. It's helped me in the field understand some critters along the way. So, money well spent, I guess.
You know, we're sitting in a motel room in the middle of South Kentucky, and you know, sometimes I feel like I'm a gypsy during the summer with these conventions.
Yeah.
How many have you done this year?
This is number 11 for me, and then my wife Donna has done two additional. So we've done 13 shows in about 15 weeks. I got two more, Oklahoma and Texas, and then I'm done.
Are you a masochist?
No, but we've... You know, trappers like to meet the guy that they're buying from, ultimately. That's a fact.
I agree.
You know that.
The driving, though. I like the shows.
Yeah.
It's the driving.
It's a little tougher not sleeping in your own bed and eating food on the road. I mean, I don't know how truckers do it, to be honest with you.
I don't either.
Over-the-road truckers. God love them. I get tired. I never want to talk to anybody again for another convention season. I'll go recharge the batteries on the Sandhill, God's country, nobody around. So.
And then you're looking forward to them the next year.
Yeah, that's true. And then I'm looking forward to it.
I mean, did you really think when you were going to, where'd you go to school at?
University of Michigan.
University of Michigan. You're getting a biology degree.
Mm-hmm.
One day you're going to be sitting in a motel room with a fat hillbilly asking you questions about trapping.
No, but it's a cool business. And my dad's a retired attorney, and dad growing up, the family's a bunch of entrepreneurs. My sister, a very smart gal, and her husband's a PhD chemist in Ohio, and they run a bee farm.
Mm.
And then I'm you know, collecting fox piss and pee, and I'm doing lures, and dad just wonders, where did we go wrong with the kids? But no, we're hard workers, as are you. None of this is given to you by the grace of God. You got to go, you know. You work it, so that's just the way it is.
Like I was making a joke with Norm tonight, it just happened overnight. People, you know.
Oh yeah.
Just one day, he decided to make lure. Then,
but on the upside of that too, I think people would be surprised. I really do think they'd be surprised on the upside in this business if you work it.
Oh, absolutely.
And I'm proud of the work we put. You know, I don't. Some people think it's. And I was reading recently one of the blogs and websites, you know, should we do demos plus sell product plus? I tell you what, if a boy gets up in the morning, owns his own business, hires employees in the hassles, does the road work, has good products, this is a business whereby people take your stuff, go sprinkle it around, and it works or it doesn't. There's no middle ground.
Mm-hmm.
And if over the years that works for you, God bless. And if it doesn't, God bless. So I don't take a backseat. I sometimes wonder, Clint, where this country's kind of headed when somebody will look down their nose at you for working hard.
Right.
I mean, you know, we'll put almost 50,000 miles on the buggy this year doing the shows.
Oh, there's no question.
That's. I mean, it's a lot of miles, and it's a lot of Waffle Houses. But it's a ball. I meet all sorts of cool people. Man, I meet all flavors. And we just smile, and you know, yeah. I learn too. I learn from customers. Bellying up to the, you know, to the booth every weekend, I will learn from people. They don't realize that, you know, I'm picking their brain like they're picking mine. And over the course, if you do that many shows, and you know that, you've come up with some grand ideas from some boy that just wandered up. And
well, there's a guy at this show. I'm interviewing him in the morning, and I think he was at the Nationals. And me and Norm have got this idea on a beaver cage trap.
Mm-hmm.
There's been one component that has absolutely kicked our tail. I mean, we couldn't figure out how to fix it.
All right.
Because we were thinking in a certain way. And he's talking about an otter trap, and he uses something that never entered our mind. And as soon as he said that, me and Norm looked at each other and went, "That's it." You know, I mean, I was like, holy cow, that was worth the Nationals if I never sold a bottle of lure.
Oh, yeah.
One little thing right there, it was like light bulbs going. He never knew what he said.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, as an example, I've got a persimmon bait. We juiced up a little bit of Widowmaker, my main selling bait this year, with some persimmon. That idea started 3 years ago when a boy came to my table at a show. He was from out of state, and he just gave me a, you know, courtesy bottle, said, "I'd like you to try this." And I did, and it was a little punchy. Had to be quieted down a little bit. If you got a grease of it on anything that you owned, it was going to stay there for the rest of your life. So I spent a little time trying to wash it off in the rivers. But he, that idea started from that boy. And that's just, I mean, a lot of good stuff.
Well, we do those trapping schools down in Texas. And because of the control jobs and stuff like that, there's not a whole lot of money in doing schools, because the ranch wants paid, the cooks wants paid, the right. maids won't pay. I mean, there's not a whole lot of money. But the reason I keep doing it is because every year, like for an example, a guy came from Mississippi,
mm-hmm.
traps a few cats. He's, you know, he came to the school, and he's watched my DVD, and he sees how I set my flags and how I got to move sets around, because I've got a certain order I want things.
Right.
he pulls out this long piece of metal. And I'm looking at it, and I'm going, what in the world is that? Because it looks just like my snare supports, but this thing's 6 foot tall. And he goes in front of the set, because I'm letting him make the mistake of there's no way to hang a flag in front of this set. Now, right. I'm being quiet, because I figured it's better to let someone make a mistake than let them see what it is. Well, he didn't make a mistake. He pulled that great big snare support out, stomped it in front of it, hung his flag on there. I'm gawking. And I'm like going, that is the coolest and most awesome thing I've ever seen. And I'm looking. I ain't paying attention to student. He's paid me to teach him.
Yeah.
I'm like over rubbing on his his flag stands,
Right.
I'm like, where'd you get this idea from? He said, well, it's just like your snare support. It's just bigger. I'm like, man, how many of these you got here? He goes, I don't know. I got 12 or 15. I said, what do you want for them? Well, I don't know. I'll give you 200, whatever the number was. He was like, it's not worth that. Did you leave them here?
Yeah.
Whatever it takes, you're leaving those here.
Right.
And I would have, it's amazing to me of seeing my snare support and knowing my video the way I do it. And then he pulls this thing out. I'm like, why didn't I put A and B together?
Right. Well, trappers are a creative bunch.
Mm-hmm.
When they come, they call you on the phone. When they meet you at a show or anywhere in between, and they say, hey, Mark, have you ever thought of this? Or, hey, have you ever seen this? Or, I mean, that's just countless. And most of those ideas I've seen, or derivatives of them I've seen, and some of them aren't. But every now and again, I'll tell you what, there's a diamond in the rough.
And so. Well, how did you get started trapping?
I lived on an inland lake in Michigan, and no one in my family trapped, but we had muskrats under the dock and that kind of thing, and I just decided to catch one. And then my dad never believed I was gonna, not that he was a naysayer, but didn't believe I was gonna get what I got. Like, I'm gonna go catch those muskrats under that dock, Dad. Yeah, well, good luck, And, mm-hmm. and I'd catch a couple and fart around and really struggle, but I'd catch a couple. I'd throw it up there and then. I actually caught a beaver down the way, and Dad told me, those can't be beaver because they were, last seen in Genesee County, Michigan in the 1930s. I just read it in the paper. I said, well, Dad, I don't know, but those are beaver. I can tell by the tail.
Mm-hmm.
and he said, we got to call the paper. And I said, no, we can't call the paper because if we call the paper, then everybody's going to know where the beaver are at.
Right.
So I got this little, I really struggled. I just had a love for nature. I was always outside. I didn't have money for gas, or if I did, I didn't use it in the little five-horse Johnson. So I just canoe, man. Grab a paddle and start canoeing to muskrat hutches, and I trapped muskrat and mink primarily, and some coon, of course, along the way, and fell into some fox that mucked into my coon sets one day. So then I was a fox trapper at the age of 12, and then when I went to college, one of the gentlemen, his name was Eugene Studier. He was a supreme bat guy at the University of Michigan. He was a world class bat guy. He had the weirdest office, bats on strings and cages, and a good bat is a dead bat. But he got a grant from the government to study some coyotes, so he put some boys together, and I was on a project and started to learn a little bit about canines. And at that time in Michigan, the coyotes were coming in and displacing fox, which of course has happened all across America now.
I mean, mm-hmm.
That was late 70s, early 80s, so kind of learned on fox, but then you better learn coyotes because that's what you got now.
Well, how did you get hooked up in the fur fishing game videos back in, when was that, late 80s, early 90s?
Yeah, well, I wasn't in the fur fish game, but I met Tom Miranda, and I was in the Trapper Predator Caller series of videos.
Okay.
With Tom Miranda, Bernie Behringer, although Tommy came to Michigan to film me in Michigan and went to Iowa to film Bernie in Iowa. So I never really met Bernie until some years later. People thought we were running the line together, how Tom edited that, but no, Tom came. But I met Tom Miranda. I took, in 1983, I was a student at Fertigers of America Trappers College in LaGrange, Indiana. And I did real well. I scored real well, and I guess I was, teaching little things on the side. But anyway, Major Boddicker and Charlie Park asked me back the next year to instruct. And I was with Odon Corr, Kermit Stearns, George Stewart, man. A lot of boys aren't with us anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a treat to bunk with them, be with them. And I met Tom Miranda the following year. He was a student at Fertigers. And I remember in my group, I literally said, hey, Tommy. I mean, he was showing some walkthrough set. I said, hey, Tommy, hold on. Everybody, gather around here. Go ahead, Tom, take it away. show us what you're talking about. And so Tom was, and we would do that to anybody who had a great idea. Hey, you know, stop, everybody come on over here, because you're out in the field. And Tom and I hit it off. And
now, this is when the school was out in Colorado or somewhere, right?
It started there, but then they moved it to LaGrange, Indiana.
That's where I went about 12 years ago, something like
okay.
that.
Okay, credited through Purdue University at the time. I mean, I don't know, I don't do it anymore. I know Ron Leggett's out there, Bob Waddell and stuff. But and I tell you what, that was another deal where you had 50 trappers then. They weren't conservation officers like they are a lot now, you know, law enforcement. They were trappers. I had 50, 10 new ones every day. And I tell you what, I saw a lot of great ideas.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't even remember what I learned there, but, oh, yeah. I'm not done learning. I never will be. But the scientist in me, the biologist in me is always thinking. One of the reasons I like trapping coyotes and such, it's just a thinking man's game.
Absolutely. You got to play chess to catch coyotes.
Yes.
Any number of them.
Yeah. I'm not talking about getting a few. I'm talking about to be consistent and good at what you do and having, you know, I was kidding the guys today at the demo I did at the show. I said, There's boys at a corner shop near you down at McDonald's having a senior coffee, and what are they talking about? They're figuring out this, that, and the other, and they're talking about who's catching beaver and coyotes on their place.
Mm-hmm.
Not coon, not muskrat or otter even. If they got a boy that can work over the coyotes or a boy that can work over the beaver, they will tell their friends.
Oh, absolutely. And,
that's how I ended up in Nebraska. On a deer hunt in Kansas, I caught a couple of coyotes one night while we were just deer hunting. The coyotes were making a ruckus behind the bunkhouse, and I grabbed some gear and pinched some coyotes the next morning, and the boy that we leased the ground from called his brother in Nebraska, who owns 77,000 acres, said, "I got a boy here who might be able to help you out." So that's the first taste I had of, and I had never even heard of a boy owning 77,000 acres. And I was trying to envision while I was talking to...
That's a national park in the East.
Oh, my good Lord. Yeah, but and that's what I tell people. If you're good at those two animals, it isn't about the price of fur. It's about they'll talk about you, and you get access to land that you may want to trap some coon on or otter or beaver or other things. You know? Yeah, so...
So why did you move to Nebraska? Just because you fell in love with it, or what was it?
Yeah, I just loved it. I mean, Michigan's a great state with a lot of resource, but the 14 million people that are competing for it. And I tell you, I would go and run those lines out in the sand hills and nobody around and great resource. And it was just a lot less hustle bustle, flying around to try to get your sets before somebody stole them. Or, I mean, I just fell in love, and I told the missus I really think we should move there. And
what did she think?
She'd never been to Nebraska. She just said, "Hey, I tell you what, we could move. We can do what we do wherever, but could we live on a lake, or maybe get an acreage?" And I told her that lake thing is going to be tough in Nebraska. They got a few reservoirs, but there's no lakes like Michigan. I mean, that's how we ended there. My family's always kidding me, Clint. My mom is a Cody. We are related to Buffalo Bill's grandfather at the end of the day. We're related to Buffalo Bill's first cousin. And so Buffalo Bill had his place in North Platte. That's where he lived in Nebraska. So my family's always said, "No wonder you like it out there. The family's from there." So,
but, nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. I mean, we looked to move to eastern Wyoming a couple years. We'd go out and stay with Tom Krause, God love him, he and his wife in Riverton, and look for ground in Wyoming, but my God, you can't find good water and or good electricity, and so we give up.
I hate to sound like a wimp, but every time I've been to Wyoming or Montana, after 4 or 5 days, and that wind keeps screaming, it drives me insane. I don't mind. I can trap cats in Texas when it's 110 degrees. I trapped in Alaska at 20 below, and it didn't bother me.
Right.
That wind drives me up because it's relentless.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean it's and I just don't want a part of it.
You're always trying to make a deal with Mother Nature.
She don't play no game.
No, but I'm always trying. And yeah, probably a good thing we didn't move to eastern Wyoming. It really is rough country as far as that wind. And there are days. See, I live eastern Nebraska. I live 4 miles from the Missouri River, but I don't trap there. I trap either about 4 or 5 miles west in the sand hills, north central Nebraska, or far west towards the Wyoming border, about 8 miles from where I live. Or 8 hours from where I live. And I tell you what, that wind out there are days when it blows so hard, you won't get much done today. it will blow everything off your trap. I don't care how you try to keep it on it, short of boulders. It's just not going to work.
Well, me and Cindy were driving somewhere through Wyoming, and I could feel the wind in the car. And, you know, I was born and bred in the mountains of Tennessee, so mm-hmm. this was like the only first big trip we've ever done. And we're, I mean, there ain't nothing there. You pull off the interstate, and between the interstate and the regular road are cattle gates, which I was just fascinated
with. Right.
And then well, there's a little store. The sign that has the gas thing was on a 45-degree angle in the wind. The lights were swinging back and forth. When I opened the door, it about took it off the hinges. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I put my face into that wind, I mean, your eyes almost dry up with dust. And
oh, yeah.
I go in, we get fuel, and I go in there, and I asked the lady, I said, does the wind always blow like that? She sticks her head out, and she goes, is it blowing hard? And I was like, all I need to know.
Well, guys, don't kid us. We sell my sister and brother-in-law there in Ashland, Ohio, have that bee farm. And they make chapstick for us, lip balm. That's kind of like Burt's Bees stuff, good stuff. And we'll have that at the booth, and we sell a fair amount of it. But here in the East, if I didn't bring it to Kentucky, because the boys will look at that and laugh, like, mm-hmm. you know, is there fox frenzy in that, or what are you doing with that? But they don't realize, if you go trap New Mexico up through the Wyoming corridor or my western, I'm telling you what, you will have salve on your lips and other parts, because it is just beet red. My face gets just wind burned daily. I got a boy from Georgia, Rusty Johnson, the NTA director, coming out to my ground this year. He's never been out of the Piney Woods much. I told him, I'm going to set you up. And one of the things I told him, I'm going to bring some lip balm for you. And he, excuse me? I don't really wear lip balm. I said, it's not a sissy thing, Rusty. Trust me, RJ. Trust me, you're going to need it. Or you will dry up and shrivel. Those old cowboy movies where they got the bandana or the little thing over there. I'm telling you, it's real. But it is cool country, man. You know, here in Kentucky, I look at these hills, and this is God's glory here. It's beautiful, but it's funny now. There's a lot of people. Even when there's not, it just strikes me as a lot of people. I can't wait to get back. I live in a little town of 800. I mean, I'm north of Omaha. I can be down in Omaha, and 300,000 is a big town, you know, but not really in the East. That's not a big. But I'll go out in those sand hills or out in the bluffs, and those folks out there have 7,000 people in the town, and that's the center. They're pretty proud of it. This is a regional center.
Well, when me and Cindy were in Maine this year, what really got me turned on about Maine is when they told me Portland was the biggest city. And that's like a third of Chattanooga, and in Tennessee, Chattanooga's not a big city.
Right.
And I'm like, what? How many people are in Maine? Oh, it's about 1 million. Maine's a big state.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I was like, say that number again.
Yeah.
He said, well, it doubles, you know, for 3 months when tourists come up here, but it's 1 million people. And my brain started working that over. And I'm like going, that's amazing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, we're looking. And then it's kind of been fun. Now, these last few years, I challenged myself. My new challenge is to go to different states. And I have been, Louisiana, you know, Texas, similar to yourself, and then Louisiana and Georgia. I got a chance to go to some Mississippi this year. I don't know if I'll pull it off. A lot depends on the weather. I'll stay in my Nebraska ground as long as I can. Fur's worth the most. My gosh, today's, you know, they're getting 12 inches of snow out in the bluffs, and that's about 2 months early. When the weather kicks me out, I'll go down to Louisiana first and then bump back over to Texas.
What are you doing in Louisiana?
We live market. We're down about an hour off the Gulf, and their cat season starts so early, it's ridiculous. So cat season's open in November. And I say it doesn't really matter because the hides never really thicken up much anyway. You can catch one in February or November, and there's not a ton of difference.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but still, cats are, you know, as you know, they're worth money everywhere now. So I'm going down November live market for coyotes, and make sure those walker dog boys have something to chase, I guess. And then I'm going to go back for sure in February and do some cat trapping too.
And before we get into coyote trapping, you keep urine, right?
Yeah, we collect red fox and coyote.
And they're pinned on your place?
Thank God I didn't build it on my place. We were going to. But I didn't realize we started the adventure about 7 years ago, where the guy, I used to get some real good stuff out of New York, but the boy died, and so looking around the marketplace, it is hard to find quality. There's just so few people. It's like dairy farming. The boy dies, the family doesn't do it anymore. And so slowly over the last, you know, 30 years I've been at this game, 35 years, a lot of stuff. There just isn't a lot of new blood coming in. It's sad. I mean, it truly is. You know that. So we decided to build a building, and I built it next to a feedlot, 100 miles west of where we live, actually. Put some money in a building. And
you have like a manager that manages it for you? Is that how you do it?
Yeah, the guys that work the feedlot also work for me on the side. It's a great deal because they're full-time on the feedlot, but they come over, feed my animals, clean the cage, all that, on the side.
So you saw a need, and the entrepreneur gene you were talking about kicked in.
And I got on the phone and I called some of the bigger dealers in our business and said, "Hey, boys, I'm thinking of doing this. Would you be interested?" In all of them, because they're on the same boat. Mm-hmm. It's getting harder to find quality. I don't do bobcats. Too much paperwork. Too much. And they come and inspect your cages more often, and I have to be there physically when they come out and look at the cages. So, and it's just because I don't live, But no, it's been a good event. It's entrepreneur.
So how do you? I'm assuming. I've never used your urine that I know of. I may have through somebody else. I don't know that. But
right.
I'm assuming you take steps to keep it as clean as possible.
We do. There's a filtration system. We use, we built, some underground storage facility because that's the best way to keep it. It's too expensive to keep it above ground in storage tanks. But we bought tanks and put them underground so we pump. But it's just money. But if you do it right, it's worth it. Urine is about volume anyway at the dealer level, at the wholesale level, it's volume. Mm-hmm. At the retail level, in the customer room. But it's labor intensive, feeding the animals, cleaning the cages, oh my lord,
Well, do you sell it like by the 4-gallon lot and a 5-gallon bucket type thing? Because I've heard that so many times, I'm like, what a freaking mess to try to get that in a jug.
It is, we love it when we can put it in a drum, a 55-gallon drum, we love that. But most of the customers we sell it to don't want it that way because they don't want to pay somebody to put it in gallons. So we bring it in the drums to my buildings where I live, and then we work it into gallon jugs, and it goes out in 4-packs. Yeah, it is a labor-intensive thing, and that's one of the reasons we're looking to move to Texas. My buildings now, I cannot use a fork truck just where we're at. I got the buildings, but I can't get a truck there because it's too hilly. You can, and I've had 18-wheelers get up in there, hear the air brakes go off, and go step out the buildings. Oh, my God, man, that was a heck of a truck run. Whoa, you got a rough driveway. I didn't know you were coming. So we're looking to move to Texas where I can get some buildings, and I'll just truck it down. We'll bring it into our building, but offload it with some fork trucks,
mm-hmm.
So... That's another thing that I think people have been amazed. I've been to Sterling and Furk. He's got a great operation. I don't know if you've ever been there in Ohio. Mm-hmm. It's big, and he he's a major distributor in the business. But Cavens have the nicest buildings and the craziest set of beautiful, beautiful facility. Minnesota Trapline Products, just incredible. And I go there often. We're only 5 hours apart, and I watch those boys take stuff off trucks and move it around. First thing I think of, I think people would be amazed at the volume of stuff goes out for trapping.
Oh, absolutely.
Because we live in a little world, and we think that a couple 5-gallon bucket. No, I'm talking about buildings full of Hiawatha Valley bait out there for Timmy. I mean, it's wow. That's a lot of it's and.
Well, I mean, the volume. I think is. People ask me, and you may sell more than me. I don't know, but it's. I got now where. Ounces don't even make sense anymore. I know. The way that my boxes are for UPS, it's easier for me to keep up now with it in cubic feet. Yeah. As strange as that sounds, mm-hmm. but I'll know, okay, F&T's getting 6 cubic feet, and Tim's getting this, and they're getting that. Okay, we did 14 cubic feet of lure, and then I get to thinking, that's a deep freeze.
Yeah.
No wonder I'm having so much trouble keeping up with this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But there's a lot of guys that are, way bigger that are selling as much or more, and you think about that volume going... Around, it's. I think the trapping industry is a lot bigger than what we in this little circle think it is.
Yeah, it is. It really is. And if you see what some of these guys have and what they sell, and it's still cool because I think as I talk to people, there a lot of them are just scared of trappers. There aren't any more trappers, and I tell you what, there are more trappers than people, and that's not a bad thing. I heard it today at the show. It's a bad thing with these hype. No, it's not. I mean, there's always people that we probably don't want to be out there and about and up to no good and skullduggery. I get that part. But, for instance, I was at the Wyoming show, and last year Alan Sinner said they had a handful, and he was apologizing. Mark, I sure hope we had a good show. Thanks for coming. I drove about 800-plus miles west of me to come. And, you know, I don't put on the show, and I know, boys, they're all volunteers. They're working as hard as they can in all these states. Alan says, we had 12 people last year, Mark, and if nobody shows, I said, Alan, relax. Relax, brother. They'll come or they won't. 186 people showed up. And the Wyoming, I believe that they tripled their membership overnight. Now, is that, you bet that's a good thing. Because that trickles down to the state level, to the fur bear biologists, to everybody in politics. If there's nobody doing it, then you don't get a vote. So, you know, it's...
Well, I think trappers, especially our age and older, because, I mean, I don't know about you, but I feel like every now and then I'm turning that crotchety old man you see on TV, and, you know, and it's easy to be cynical and
right.
and all that type of stuff. But, like, I know you've got an internet store, and I don't know what else you do online, but, you know, I've got, like, 16 different websites.
You're active as can be.
Yeah, and it's, you know, one of them is it's bumping 300,000 individual users a year, Wolfer Nation is. But what I'm seeing more than anything at these shows, because Norm's with me a lot of times, he's blown away.
Yeah.
Is 15-year-old to 25-year-old, because of technology, and they can see it and go, that's cool.
Right.
They're getting in when, if we didn't have this technology, I don't think they would, because they wouldn't know about it.
Correct.
But they're seeing it. You know, they can go to YouTube, they mm-hmm. get on websites like mine, Trapper Man, Sullivan's site. I mean, all these different sites, and they're getting to interact, and they get to see the pictures now, because
oh yeah,
the server's getting a little cheaper to do, and people can upload more of that stuff. And I mean, just on Facebook, I don't know if you're on Facebook or not.
I'm not. My wife is much. But it's interesting you mention it, because I had a young group out of Des Moines came to the business this year, and they pitched me, I'll call it, on this, that, and the other from a media perspective. They were a media group. They weren't trappers, but they had worked with another trapping company out east that would, I guess, given them my name. So they looked at my website, outdated. They looked at my catalog, outdated. Look,
your website needs some help.
Well, now, yeah.
But personal.
Yeah. So they, and I agreed. We've been so busy the last number of years, and my wife built the website 10, 12 years ago and all that. And so they said, let's do the catalog first. I said, all right. And they put, it's a great project, the in-house photography. I mean, it's a sweet catalog, different size, different. I looked, and it's really striking. I really liked it. So I said, all right. And then they said, could we'd like to do your website and complete with YouTube uplinks and all this widgetry. I said, man, okay, but we were only a month from the start of the peak season, and my wife Donna was fretting, oh my God, we're going to muck this up. And I said, I think they know what they're doing, babe. So we, there were some hurdles, and there was some back and forth, because they weren't trappers, but they knew, but I tell you, they were really good. And I tell you what, we got a cool, have you been on our website lately? You may not have been then. If you say, it is a cool site. There is flying things and uploaded.
No, but, see, the last time I saw your site, it was just a white page.
Yeah, it's, that's,
and like
that's
Mark June Sense and,
yeah, yeah,
you know, click here type thing.
In fact, they built it, and then they said, we need to upload your intros to your videos, and then those will go on YouTube. We'll have this integration. I'm an educated guy, but I'm not IT savvy, only because I don't want to be. I'm mm-hmm. scared that if I got into it, I'd get hooked. So on purpose, but yeah, and I tell you, it has just blown up our business. And you're right, it's a lot of people who know when they know traps, but they found it online via another outlet.
Absolutely.
Which led them to this one.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's, I am surprised. And then we can view how many YouTube clicks or hits have viewed the, oh my Lord. Oh my Lord. It's virtually every minute of the day somebody's watching those goofy things. We can sit there and watch the clicker going and.
Oh, it's amazing. The YouTube channel, when I started that, it was kind of like, I really didn't understand how YouTube worked.
Right.
I went about it in a way of being like, Wolfer Nation's a heavy content driven site. There's like 5 new posts a week. You know, we got a magazine. That's a joke to me.
Right.
I mean, we got like 60 years of magazine on a website, you know. So I understood that, and I started doing some on YouTube. Well, then I forgot I put those up there. For like a month, you know, yeah. I know it was like 6 or 7 months. I didn't know my password when I get back on. I'm like, well, I need to, you know, see what that is. They changed my homepage and all this stuff on me. And I'm like, you know, that really aggravated me. Well, I looked on there last week, and this is what's amazing to me anyway, is we're like 30 days away from hitting 1 million views on that. I mean, that is, you couldn't do that 15 years ago.
Yeah, and again, it's an interesting time in our business where some boys would just say, my God, that's terrible. And I just don't think it is.
No, I think it's because of the younger guys, it's showing them that it's, for one, most people, do they see stuff like that? Predator Control Group is 99% going to pull the trigger on an internet-based TV show, just like TV, but with absolute carnage and chaos the way we normally do our stuff, because no one's ever seen anything like that.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Not on the internet anyway, or on TV, for that matter.
Yeah, right.
And, I'm kind of going back and forth on that, but the reason I think that's so important to show that is there's a kid out there, and I don't know his name because he says it so fast. He calls me every month. I don't think he's 13 years old. And it tickles me to death because he'll go, Clint, yeah, I'm trying to scrap squirrels. What can I do? And I mean, he's just like rapid fire. And I'm like, do you have a squirrel? But no, man, just go take some peanut butter and sunflower seeds. Well, what about this? Well, that probably worked, but you probably got peanut butter and you can get sunflower. Okay, right. Thanks, click. And it, every month. And that boy's trapping.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think he knows what to season it yet, but he's putting steel out there somewhere for something.
Right.
You know, and he's excited. And I'm like, no, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, see, we're getting long in the tooth. We're getting a soft spot for these young lads and lasses. You've probably never seen one of my demos we're having in recent. I mean, today I brought three young lads up, you know, all of, I don't know.
Well, actually, I took a picture of you with one of them. That's what's going to be on your interview.
Oh, okay.
Interview.
Yeah, you know what? I tell the boys, I'm not helping to teach some of you long in the tooth rascals. I mean, you're setting your ways anyway, so God love you. But these young folks are the future, you know, and so. I'm a grandpa now. I've got 5 grandkids. I tell you what, that sneaks up on you, and it just changes your perspective. Not just the kids, but now I got grandkids. So, you know, it's one of the reasons I want to move to Texas. I got 3 grandbabies down there now, and get down there and get me a little a short fence. We'll call it short fence ranch. Mm-hmm. I won't have enough money for a high fence ranch, but we'll have the kids over running gators around, and it's just not done enough anymore.
Absolutely.
It's just not. And I grew up with great memories. When I grew up in Michigan, from about the age of 14, I couldn't hunt at the time in Canada, but until I was about 22, I would accompany the older gentleman, my dad, and his friends from high school, and we would go up to Canada to hunt moose. And you talk about cold, freezing, chopping ice with the canoes. We stayed in an old lumber camp. I mean, it was ridiculous. Loved it. That was my. I mean, cut a hole in the tent at night on the river basin, and one of the boys would never go back until somebody had a moose down and somebody was chewing on raw moose liver. He would not let his sons go back and sleep in a warm anything. And those kids were my age. I mean, those are my fondest memories, man. Mm-hmm. And then some of those boys are dead now. They're just dead. And I want my grandkids to taste some of that. In a world where they're on video games and God knows. I told my son, man.
I'd much rather bring a bunch of younger guys to get them off the computer.
Yeah.
To get out in the woods and see there's more to life than that screen.
Well, I've been talking recently. I don't know. I've been on this kick lately. So what do you and I talk about, Clint? We don't know each other that well. But even if we do or don't, and we get together with people, what do you talk about? You talk about the hard times, the things that made you what you are. And that was growing up. And I just look and I think, man, hey, remember when we were having that great video game over at your house? They won't remember. There's no memories. I mean, my God, my girls and I, you know, I got 3 girls, and our greatest memories, remember the time we caught 22 muskrats over at Burkhart's place, and we all went out on the end of the dock, took a picture, Mom took a picture, and the dock fell in, and the dock gave way, we all, oh, dear God, and I thought, yeah, Katie, I thought you were going to drown, I grabbed you first, heck with the rats, but you guys were, yeah, that was a terrible day, but it was awesome.
Well, some of my best memories were being like in 5th, 6th, 7th grade. You'd be put in jail if you let your kids do what we did.
Yeah.
We're in Phenix City, Alabama. We're playing Army in beaver swamps with cottonmouths and alligators up to our necks with BB guns shooting each other and having the time of our life.
Yeah.
And you can't do that with a, you know, you learn to swim because the hornets are hitting you in the back of the head and you need to get under the water. You mean you learn, but yeah. Those memories, and my niece, my nephews and stuff now, you know, what do? Well, I'm going over to my, but we're going to play video games or we're going to play basketball or I'm like, you're missing life.
No, my kids, they got tired of hearing the stories, you know, that Buffalo Bill thing. So Buffalo Bill, his father was killed. They were from Iowa, and he was killed when Buffalo Bill was young, about 10 years old. And so Buffalo Bill, at the age of 12, to help his mom make some money, he went to Nebraska and signed up for the Pony Express. And he held the overland record of 200 and some miles continuous riding on multiple horses along the Platte River Basin. Now, I'm talking dark. I'm talking a few Lakota Sioux and some Blackfoot that were still a little bit irritated about the whole deal. I'm talking he didn't know the way. And he rode that horse for 200 miles. And so when my kids think they got an issue, all I had to say was, did I ever tell you about the two? Yeah, Dad, you told us about that stupid night ride. I said, but think about it, a 12-year-old on a horse 200 miles, and it's dark. I'll take you out to that sand. It's dark. That horse knew where to go, because he sure didn't. But he did it. And today, parents don't want to let their kids sit at the end of the driveway. And I get the part, we're in a big, bad world, but you got to give, but it ain't that big and it ain't that bad. I mean,
No. I mean, there's probably places that are, but what, George Washington 13 and he's surveying the state of Pennsylvania?
Yeah.
Good grief, you don't even let a 13-year-old go to the store by himself now.
No, I don't know. Anyway.
Well, what's your theory? I want you to get into coyote trapping. So what's Mark June's theory of coyote trapping?
I know one thing. It's not as simple as when people call me on the phone and, Mark, I got a question. Hey, I got these coyotes are killing, you know, these deer on my place. Could you tell me how to catch them? Oh, my Lord. And I just smile on the phone. And I think there's some common themes. I've always believed and just learned early on they're not fox. A fox is a very inquisitive animal. They'll work a set. They'll spend a lot of time at whatever you throw at them most often if things are looking good. A coyote is vastly different.
Oh, absolutely.
They are skittish by nature and they'll take a moment. And I told the guys a quick story at the show today. If I take you to my fox pens and then we throw favorite food, they love a quarter of a bobcat carcass. We throw that into the fox and they're on it in a heartbeat. In fact, they're going for the door. They're coming out, but they'll eat that cat. And that's no big deal. You'd expect that. You walk down the couch, you open up the door. I'll sit there and talk to you with the door open, and you go, oh, careful with those coyotes. I said, no, they ain't getting out. They're in the back of the cat. And I'll throw that cat quarter in there. They don't touch it. There'll be three or four of them in there. They're all just kind of easy. I'm not, no. They just got to get used to it. That's the difference right there. And turn off the lights. We'll leave. We'll come back later. Turn the lights on. It's probably still going to be there. Now they're going to eat it, and they're going to eat every last bit of it. Crunch the bones; it's gone. But they don't. That's a coyote. So I say, guys, when you're out in the field and you're getting kind of gaudy and you're getting a little wild, just be careful that some of that stuff is spooking the coyotes a little bit. And you can catch coyotes every which way. You know, you've caught coyotes. Weird stuff. I'm talking about consistently. And then I like to think in the East versus West a little bit. I mean, I don't think there's a vast difference, but in the East, it's been my experience that if I say, hey, Clint, come and check this set out, man, look at this beautiful smoking set. What do you think? And if you go, man, look at that set, that's not going to work too good. If Clint comes over and goes, hey, Mark, where'd you put that set at?
You're going to catch
cows. Now we're talking. Now, you want to come west for me, dig a little bigger hole, get a little more aggressive. It's a little different animal. I find that they dig stuff up better than you. Man, look at that badger digging you did. That's sweet. Now, that's not Eastern United States.
Well, when I first went out to Craig, I spent a week with him the first time.
Yeah.
And about like day, you know, we went through his regular two-day course, and then we went calling on Wednesday, and he was like, what do you want to do?
Right.
So I want bobcats. That's about bobcats. He says, well, what else you want to do? Bobcats. And being an instructor now, he's probably going, how am I going to do this for 48 hours?
Right.
But, you know, when we're driving, I'll never forget, because we ever since I've been trapping, there's never been a lot of red fox where I've been.
Okay.
So there, you know, there's still kind of a what are they really about, this, that, and the other. And I asked him, you know, Craig, if you're sure you've seen him before, he's like 8'9".
Yeah.
You know, and he wears them big old glasses, and he's in that big, that, and I swear in his truck, he's found some way to raise his seat up and lower yours down. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he's done that, you know, for psychological reasons.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting over there feeling like a kid, all 330 pounds of me, you know, looking up at him, and I ask him about red fox. I'll never forget what he said, because his fox instructing lasted 15 seconds. He looks over in glasses, and he's looking down at me like a school teacher said, can you catch a skunk? I said, yeah. Well, you can catch any fox that walks. Next question. I was like,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, that's that fox in the cage. You throw something in, they're on it. They're curious, and it gets them in trouble. And so, like I said, that coyote, he's just a skittish animal, and it's a good trait that make that's the survivor in them right there. If they ran to every funny thing that the boys are throwing out for them, from a bleached bone to God knows what, if they ran to every one and hiked a leg or dug it out, they'd be easier to catch. But they don't. Some do, and that's why it's hard. It's hard for me. I mean, I just talk coyotes all year long, and I tell guys the weirdest story, okay, and I did today again in my demo. Sometimes I'll think of it and I'll bring it up. I said, all right, we'll start at this side of the room, boys, and this side of the bleachers, and we'll just the weirdest quiet coyote you ever caught. Mine's by a tongue, okay? Caught one by a tongue one time years ago. No front paw, no hind paw. I had a tongue in a trap. And there's hardly any remake circle. That's weird. Okay. And then, Jimmy, you go ahead. And then they look at me like I'm weird, but I'm trying to make a point in that you can catch a coyote every which way, but I don't go.
Big coyote.
A coyote, but I don't go. I'm not showing them my, you know, my tongue catching set. I mean, there is no. That was just a stupid one. Must have been licking the pan in the water, but it held her too.
Well, did you try to jerk out of it?
No, it's. I mean, I will never. Just all those weird things you get, you know. But no, so that's kind of, but to consistently be good at it, where the boys at the corner store talk about you, and pass your name on. I mean, that's called predation work. So,
well, when it, you know, with the biggest thing, I tell you, one of the biggest eye-opening things that's ever happened to me in coyotes is I'm catching about 100, 150 a year, you know, in the East. That's pretty much that's, unheard of.
Yeah, that's good.
And I'm doing, you know, the old Gorman big hole set and about 50% that, 50% flat set. We got on these places that had goats. Goats are new in Tennessee. Coyotes apparently really like eating goats.
Oh, boy.
Because they were wearing them out. So I go around these pastures, had good fence, really grown up in the barbed wire, so any hole it was obvious.
Right.
So I start setting snares, not paying any attention to it. I come back next day, got coyotes. Next day, coyotes. Next day, coyotes. Well, I'm pulling one out one time, and then it just happens to, why'd this coyote come through here? And I turn around, and I'm looking. And this is, I think, the second coyote I caught out of that run, and another one just a couple of runs down. So that's three in about 30 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking around, and it just hits me. I would never, ever set a set here. There's no, you know, location. There's no anything. But there's three coyotes
right.
That's come through, and guaranteed more.
Yeah.
Where we, the trapper that knows trapping, and that really rocked my world as far as, do we really have a clue about coyotes? And then that led me down a bunch of different roads. But, you know, I was the, you do this, and this, you catch coyotes. I'm catching lots of coyotes.
Yeah, I mean, I've kept notes, and I have these little notebooks, and I have them since about, with a year or two exception, since about 1976, my first year of college. And their notes are just varied, but they always, L, lure, B, bait, U, urine, A for alpha, J for juvie. I mean, I don't do weather pattern, all that kind of junk. I'm just, what kind of set? So I can over these many years, try to find a theme in a zone. And I think that is one of the things that trappers miss. They go to work each day. That, you know, they're maybe doing it on the weekends, maybe not. It doesn't matter. But they put stuff down a hole, or they don't, and they don't know what they're using.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the stuff they're running by is really good, and they don't know. And some of the stuff they're using is really not, and they don't know. Me, I I have a routine. When I'll be pounding steaks on Halloween, October 31st. I'll be pounding steaks in my Sand Hill Country. And I will come back and I will start. I'll come back after I'm running the line, starting to catch stuff. And I'll have a bowl of chili, maybe a couple of adult beverages to rehydrate and call it. But while I'm eating that chili, I'm looking for any themes. Is any urine sticking out? Is any particular set? Some years urine posts are blowing up.
We got to get you in the modern age. What you're talking about are algorithms.
Yeah.
Not themes, algorithms. See, yeah. Now younger people are going, I know what Mark's talking about now.
But no, I'm trying to find a theme. And some years you need to beef up certain sets, and certain years I don't need to use them at all. And I think it has to do with, a better hatch. They've got bigger litters going on. I find it in the years where there's a big litter, a lot of dispersion, my urine posts are just dynamite. My volume one of my DVD, the first seven coyotes I catch that day, all urine posts. Of course, we're filming. I'm thinking, dear Lord, please let him hit a T-bone or something so I can film. And we pull, oh, Mark, you got another one? Of course, it's on the urine post. Now, that year was one of the biggest years for coyote denning. I mean, we had little ones running, so they were just hitting them. And you need to know that. I think most people go out and set their line and just set traps. I don't know. Yeah.
Well, I think a lot of downside. Well, I'm going to say one thing about what you said earlier, because I know exactly what you're talking about, and I found an answer for you. When someone calls up, how do I catch coyotes? And they want the 2-minute version. I always ask them what they do for a living. A mechanic, building houses, whatever it is, ranching.
Right.
And go, bud, I'd love to help you, but could you explain to me in 2 minutes how you rebuild an engine?
That's probably good. I'm going to take that. I'm gonna borrow that.
Well, I mean, because a lot of the people that don't trap think of them like house dogs. You put food in the Alpo in the bowl, and the dog comes up, and you got a trap, and you catch.
Yeah,
well, that ain't the way it works.
You use Purina, or what do you use? Yeah,
And you start going into locations, and you know they're lost in 30 seconds. You know they want a formula.
Sure.
And there is none. Well, I can't find one on couch.
No, if it was that easy, no, it isn't even. I'm going to use that, man. I actually like that a lot.
Well, at least it puts it in perspective.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, for guys out there that are listening, when you send an email to Mark or me or Graham or whoever it is, they're making a difference. Yeah. Try to make them specific.
Yeah, we're trying too. We really are. I know you're really. I mean, I hear good things about you. We're trying to get back with them, but we're kind of laughing too and crying a little bit. It's just not possible.
Oh yeah. How do you? Well, the one last way, a guy called me. He calls me from Pennsylvania every at least twice. Great guy. He traps junkyards of all things in Pennsylvania around Boston. Has a good catch.
Oh yeah.
You know, and I'm like, well, that's.
Yeah.
Something I've never thought of. And he calls, and this year he called, this was last week, and he goes, how do you pick your states that you go trapping in? Then how do you get permission? Then how do you know what the locations are? And I'm like thinking, that's like 3 full books that I'd have to think about.
Yeah, and then we're a little hesitant to pull the trigger. I mean, if and when I say, hey, I wrote a great book, I've got a video. Then they think we're pitching, but I'm trying. Hey, you know what? For the $40 for that doggone DVD, you're riding along. It's insane, is what it is. I never had that option when I was younger. For $40, I spent more than $40, and money went further back then. But man, I read every fur fish game. I attended, auctions and hung around anything, just trying to pick up gossip from the old farts who told you nothing. And I look at that these days. That I try to help a lot of people along the way. I enjoy teaching. I know you do too. Mm-hmm. I do. But I'm not pitching. Yeah, I'm in business. I'd like to sell my product. I'm proud of it, as are you. I know you are. It's good stuff. I've seen your stuff. I've watched your video, and it's good stuff. So.
Well, the thing about videos, because conventions, it makes you wonder. And this may be a dangerous topic to broach as publicly in as many people as listen to this radio. But someone comes. I'm going to use Pennsylvania for an example. A guy shows up and he wants to catch a bobcat. I mean, for 3 years, he's been trying to catch a bobcat. So you ask him what he's doing. you see 94 different things wrong that he's telling you right off the bat.
Right.
And you try to give him a breakdown version of what you do. Then he's got 94 questions on each one of those. And, I mean, this could turn into an eight-hour ordeal. And you physically can't do that at a show because you're trying to recoup the money you made and try to make a little bit of money.
Right.
You know, and you spend 20, 30 minutes with him, and finally you break down and do the, you know, dude, Cat Collector shows you from A to B exactly what I do in this situation, this situation, this situation. Well, how much is it? I think it's $45 what I sell it for, 40, whatever
right,
it is.
Right, right.
And he goes, $45? Now, and from my point of view, and I guarantee you're going to agree with me, I didn't make that video for about 6 years because I knew there was a few things I hadn't figured out yet.
Mm-hmm.
So when someone buys that video for $45, think about 40, that's like a half a tank of gas.
Yeah.
That's 8 years of my life. That's figuring this out over close to 700 Bobcats in that 8 years. That's, good grief, 90,000 miles just on Bobcats.
Yeah.
All the money I wasted when I didn't know what I was doing to figure this out. All that time, all that energy, all that production for $45, and $45 is
for four buffets.
And I'm like going, really?
Yeah.
You know,
it's the same thing. I've been blessed. The Lord's blessed us, and I've missed tens of thousands of coyotes, but I've killed thousands. And you know, almost 40 years now, and I look a little younger than I guess I am. People,
how old are you?
I'm 56.
Well, you do look younger.
Yeah, they go, man, I thought you looked like you're in the 40s. So I've been at it I've been killing them for about 40 years. And if you ding a few here and 100 there and 400 over there, pretty soon you got thousands. But I've missed so many that I've learned from my mistakes.
Absolutely.
I mean, case in point, my cats last year at NAFA was north of $600 average. Let me tell you something. You miss a coon, no big deal, put it back. You miss You miss a $600, $800, $900 cat, you will sit there on your haunches and you will study what you did wrong. And we call it heartache. And I have, man. June Wood, well, for God's sakes. And we need to regroup that, because that $900 bill is walking into the prairie. I'll never see him again. Mm-hmm. It's a big cat, never. I mean, so. So you learn. We learn. It's over those thousands, and I'm offering that. I love teaching. I'm offering it, but if they don't think it's worth that price, then that's fine too.
It is. But I guess from when you make them, your point of view is for what that cost for me to get the information to give you for $40. That's like, I mean, you should give me a kiss for that, just because of the money difference and the years to do that.
Yeah, I did it because I used to do more instruction work. I used to go, and I've been to different states, and I enjoyed it. I'd be with a guy for 2 years, you know, kind of like what Craig does. I went to their ground more than having them come to mine. In Michigan, I got burned years ago. I had a gentleman come and ride my line with me. Bill, he was a superintendent of a school, told me, you know, had a great story about how he couldn't trap much, and you know, school superintendent, and he wouldn't do it. But I tell you what, the next year, he got some kind of a sabbatical or something, and he was, Bill, yeah, I remember, man. I've been on many moons ago, but he was right there next to me at the fur auction. He piled the red fur up in the coyote fur. He was, he'd run my line with me. So he had the farms next to me, and it dinged me hard. So I don't think I will ever again take people on the line. Mm-hmm. I just don't need it, and I enjoy, but I'll go on theirs. But I didn't. But then I started doing all these shows, and there's not enough of me. So I did the video. That's like you're riding with me. You're in the field. We're not, and I'm not to pick up tailgate saying, hey, this is what I would do. Nah, grab a camera. We're MTV. We're going right down through the pucker, and we're getting it done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's try to make it like you're taking instruction.
What is your idea on the way coyotes approach sets?
We talk about the scent plume that comes off the attractors to a downwind side. So I say, today here we're in Kentucky. Now we're in, I got some mountains and some hills and all the above. So you get a little switchy wind, but most of the eastern United States got that west wind. So have your face to the west, two out of three sets, so that animal can come from a downwind side, approach it in. And I'm a believer in that approach from a 45 degree angle. just if you're going to make things easy, I know there's people like Mark Zagger and stuff who do things different. Tuck the trap up tight to the attractive. That's fine. There's no right or wrong way. The more you fight City Hall, I call it, the coyote by his nature will stick his nose here and be standing back 9 to 11 inches. That's just how God made him. If that's not where you put your trap pan, cool, but you better be even better at showing them where to step.
Have you ever trapped in mountains like this?
Missouri. I mean, you know, it's just some hollows and stuff, but not like this. Not quite like this.
Well, just for your information, the one of the things that you like, you would figure this out, I have no doubt. But when you get in mountains like this, with the elevation changes the way as fast as it does here, because it's just like where I live.
Yeah.
When you get at the base of the mountain every night, the air cools off, wind comes downhill, and that completely changes the wind for about 4 hours.
Okay.
And then it calms down. So in the mountains, you've got to learn that the air is going to be blowing from the mountain to the field,
okay,
regardless of the way it normally is.
Right.
And it took me a long time to figure that, because I seen some goofy reactions.
Yeah. Some of our bluff country where it comes up to some of our ag country out there in the Panhandle of Nebraska is that way. If it's just that air currents are floating up the hillside towards the Rockies, and ultimately, and then some come back down. Yeah, and for that reason, if I see, and again, that soil's lighter out there, so I get to see good. Again, mm-hmm. It's humbling. If I see a critter walking by, I don't get all tore up about it often. I just don't think he smelled it. I just don't think it was, you know. And if a guy's riding with me, he'll ask, "Oh my God, what's with this?" And I've got a theme there. I said, "Boys, let me tell you something about a coyote. That's, if he's onto us, he flat goes around you. I mean, he goes way around mm-hmm. you. He doesn't want any part of you. That coyote right there just walked on by. He never smelled it. We just victim of bad luck, you know.
I think a lot of coyotes do. No matter how good the lure is, they're being coyotes.
Yeah, I call them lazy, efficient hunters. I mean." When we were doing, I did coyote research for 4.5 years in my college days, in my undergraduate and graduate studies, and it was that Eugene Studier, that back guy, and his grant studies we talked about first off. I mean, I learned from them a lot. I learned a lot of different, but then I was always a little bit of a rogue, too. In the days they were using venison, they were using woodchuck, they were using mice, all the natural foods, and I was one of the first guys to walk into a field office when I worked for the state of Michigan for a couple years, And I'd read something about a feral cat or something. So I got this cat. I'm going to throw him down a hole. You know what? And we had plenty of venison because the venison boys, that was a big deal in Michigan. That floated everything, the deer license money. So we had venison of all flavors, aged to fresh.
Mm-hmm.
And I call it like my mac and cheese theory. I know coyotes love venison, but they had mac and cheese on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I'm gonna throw some pizza down the dirt hole, boys, on Friday. And if they're not hungry, they're still gonna come and sniff that pizza. So I'd throw stuff that was just different
mm-hmm.
at these coyotes who, and I did real well. But still, the boys I was with, the pride, no, venison. It's like, okay, I don't try to, I try to prove it to myself more than I try to prove it to other people. But I love trappers. They're prideful.
Oh, yeah.
I will go, when I went to Louisiana, and Terry Dowden, the gentleman I met at the Columbia National Convention, invited me down. I took him up on it. That boy was going to the spots he was going to, no matter what I might suggest. But I was only down there for 17 days initially, and I got to make hay. And so we had to retool because we were killing possums, and I was really more after dogs and cats, you know, the coyotes and just different things. It's a fun game we do, man. It's interesting. So
you're thinking about moving to Texas?
Yes, sir.
So you're going to get out of the coyote business a little bit and go into the cat, fox, and coon business.
You know, I'll still come back to Nebraska, probably. Probably a lot. I mean, I would just because, like I did for Michigan, as I was a non-resident. I will still trap Nebraska away from home, like I do today living there. But then I'll also have access to stuff in Texas. And that's an interesting endeavor, you know, that pays. But you got to work.
Mm-hmm.
That's tough country. That is tough country. You got to have good equipment.
I still think you're going to turn into a drag man before it's over with. I'll give you about 3 years.
Could be.
You'll lose about 40 pounds,
and then I'll see you sneaking drags from somewhere in the back of the truck.
But those three grandbabies I got growing. See, I got three grandbabies in Texas, one in Michigan, and one in Tennessee. Now, I got to get Grandma close to some grandbabies, too, man. And we're tired of winters a little bit, her more than me. I'm gone a lot, man, and she's plowing ground. We literally have to plow our road to get to our place so UPS can come pick up orders. And meanwhile, I'm out of state because, you know, the weather turned crappy, so I head south somewhere so you can catch more fur. Less mm-hmm. money, but more fur. Well, it's just not going to keep. It's just not good anymore. And she, my wife Donna was raised on a farm. She knows how to work machinery and all that. But she, you know, she's
Texas is a great state.
Oh man,
I was telling you though, anybody want to live down there in the summertime, it's got to be tougher than woodpecker lives. I'm not man enough for it.
I'm gonna get up in the hill country a little bit, so take the edge off of it.
But my brain still goes.
Well, you're going to Maine, and I think you bumped your head.
I'm going to be in Texas in the winter. See, but when I'm making lure, it'll be 70.
Yeah, but there's only 6 weeks of summer in Maine.
Yeah, but a fat boy's like cold weather.
Okay, I'll give you that. Excuse me. But I still think you're going to get tired of those scallops with your burgers.
No. I'm already. There's 10 lobster pots up there with my name on it.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to come out and visit you for some good seafood. There's none better. But y'all can come on down. I'll be up in the hills an hour outside of San Antonio. I'm going to be on the dry side. I won't be the humid east side of Texas. Those boys are too tough for me, too. I've been invited to run with some boys over in Livingston and that ground, and I'm always polite and say I'll think about it, but I ain't going. Because even in January, I mean, it's hot in January. I mean, oh my gosh, yeah.
Well, I did a job in Del Rio for a guy that owns an oil company. He calls me in May. He wants me to come down and trap in June because of his deer fawns.
Yeah.
I'm like, sir, I just came back from Texas. And I'm not coming back. He goes, okay, what's it cost? I said, dude, you can't afford it.
Yeah.
You know, and he can go pack a bag a G5 jet with cash.
Yeah, yeah.
And he goes, do you know who you're talking to? I said, no, sir, not really, but you're not hearing what I'm saying. I don't want to go down there.
Right.
So the price I would give you would be so outrageous, no sane person would pay it. He said, what is it? And I threw a number out there that there was no way.
Yeah.
He said, when are you going to be down here? And you know, within 4 days of me getting there, that thermometer was bounced between 120 and 122.
Oh.
It was not enough money after 4 days, and I was down there for 2 weeks.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And that's all I know about Texas in the summer, and it kicked my tail.
I'm a littler guy. And if I rehydrate with adult beverages, maybe we'll make it. I don't know. I'm not a big drinker yet, but I might consider it.
Well, you need the adult beverages to forget about how hot you were during the day.
Yeah. So, we won't miss that doggone winter. And Nebraska has just a short wick. It's the wind, though. Even during the chilly season. I mean, that wind will beat you up. So, I'm enjoying this Kentucky weather, man. I wake up and walk out of the hotel here, and I look, and it's not windy. It is.
Oh no.
It's weird to me. It's just it. I went to the
Winds
Georgia show,
and
I just go to some of these shows, and it's just I walk out, and when I was down in Georgia at that show, the boys, we're having a cup of coffee in the morning. I go, "You all right, Mike?" I said, "Yeah, I'm just enjoying this fine morning with no wind."
you get 10 mile an hour wind here where I live, and everybody's going, there must be a storm coming.
Oh,
well, you know, I mean, it's that strange. And well, man, I appreciate you doing this.
Oh, man, pleasure.
You know, and I'm glad you took this option instead of me tying you up to get you to do it. So
trying to do this for what, a couple of years?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm a hard man to.
Well, most of the time I see you at the Nationals, and that's just, you're just so wore out at the end of the day. I'm sure you're like going, I'll think about it.
Yeah, I'm always pleasant, though.
Yeah.
Give me a call. And well, my voice is shot by Saturday. As you know, that extra day on that show. And one more, Mark. I just have a quick question. Times 2,000.
Is your website is markjunes.com?
Markjuneslures.com.
Markjuneslures.com.
Yeah.
And you have any other websites anybody needs to know about?
No, that's the one. And that'll lead, it's got some links that'll lead you some, like I say, some intros to the videos and see if that, you know, that the instructional videos and such. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
All righty, man. Well, I appreciate it.
Oh, pleasure.